two sides, one truth. Where raw realities of humanity's dark side meets honest dialogue. Unbiased, uncensored, unfiltered. This is Murderlust.
Welcome to season one, episode 13 of Murderlust. Today we are covering the Ashley Biggs case. I'm Amber and joining me is Ava. How's your weekend?
It is going good. Saturday. Woot woot. You know, our lives aren't exactly as fun. However, you are leaving for Puerto Rico, correct? Tomorrow?
I am. This morning I got up at 3:30.
Ooh.
And then couldn't fall back asleep. Just
excitement? Like Christmas?
I would say more anxiety than anything.
Oh, I love vacations, don't you? They're so much fun.
Yeah, all the prepping, the packing, the mental preparedness, just everything that you have to do to prepare to leave your home for an extended period of time. It's very anxiety inducing for sure.
Yeah, and then come home exhausted. It just seems like it's maybe so enjoyable. It's not worth it. I know. It's another family vacay, and we do know how the last one went. There were some tears and phone calls to parents on your behalf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. And, you know, like maybe threaten to fly home early, things like that.
But
you know
what? Yeah.
I just think that this time's going to be different or not. I saw this very educational video on TikTok, and it said that travel memories are the ones that your kids remember the most because parents tend to act a little bit more, I don't know, free.
Yeah, because we're not working our ass off. Well, we're just working our asses off in different ways. Your kids are a little bit older, so you can actually enjoy yourself a little bit too. Mm-hmm. Plus, your sister's going to be there. So your niece, if there's any lip, mom is right there to handle it. You'll get to choose your own bed. I think this is going to work out nicely.
I do too. Say some prayers for me. And after this episode drops, the next one will have an update on how the trip went overall. So
good. I can't wait for that. Meanwhile, I'm just stuck here in Michigan. I'm probably going to attempt a workout.
What's the update? Like, do you have a bikini bod yet? Or,
well, you know, I will say I've lost a few pounds.
Okay.
Now, as far as definition, it's not looking bright. But I can say I'm progressing. In September, my brother is having a bachelorette party in Las Vegas. And apparently one of the people that's coming rented out, what is it called? T-A-O, Tao? How do you say that? Tao?
Tao.
Tao? Wow. That's supposed to be like a really popular nightclub, right?
Yes, as a matter of fact, it is. It is a very...
I guess I'm going to Tao. That's what it's called. And it's a big pool party. We have our own cabana and our own premium bottle service, which means everybody is going to be surrounding me in skimpy-ass bikinis because I'm sure they're women, which good for them. But I need to feel a little bit okay about myself. So I'm going to continue to work hard so I fit in as a 40-year-old at a cabana party at Tao.
You know, as far as hot girl summer is concerned, I think you have that covered. However, calling it Tao, you know, maybe we could work on the lingo a little bit before you go. Yeah. Because I'm not worried about the bod.
Oh, man. People think that, I don't know if you get this, but they think that as Michiganders have an accent when we go other places.
I hear it all the time. Yeah. I don't think that I do. But there are times whenever I say Minnesota, I know I sound like I'm from Minnesota, but I'm not from Minnesota. So yes, I 100% know what you're talking about.
Because you mix in this supposed accent with my age and my poor verbiage and probably sound like I'm 60. So, you know, oh my gosh, I just heard it when I said, you know, you remember Bobby's mom from Bobby's World?
Uh-huh.
I have been told I sound like her. Is it funny? Ha ha, yes. At the same time, this could really work against me, so.
It's the O's and the A's.
I'm just going to roll with it.
Well, you have until September, and I'm sure it's going to be fine. It's all going to work out. It's going to be fine. All right. Well, let's get into it.
Okie doke. Today, we are examining a case that really illustrates the essence of humanity. This case will showcase the imperfections in our reasoning and behavior when we allow our emotions to overshadow our judgment and rationality. It's really a complex case. It delves into themes of love, betrayal, and prompts reflection on the extent of loyalty and the consequences when love fades. Is this loyalty still in place? Will our secrets be kept? There are many players in this particular story, including parents, step-parents, and grandparents. Their journeys are so intertwined that even one choice made by any of these individuals I just mentioned holds the power to alter the path of all lives associated. Now, initially, the events leading up to this tragic situation was sparked by a contentious child custody battle. It's going to unfold in a tangled web of lies, betrayal, and eventually revenge. New Franklin, Ohio is a fairly small city in southwestern Summit County, Ohio, with a population of about 14,000. It offers its residents a rural and wholesome experience with low cost of living and is statistically a safe place to live. Now, they run these studies all the time about where is the safest cities, what is the fattest cities, and New Franklin ranks 61% safer than other cities in America, even ranking in the top 100 safest cities in the nation annually. So it's a small place, good morals, lots of family values, and it shows in their crime statistics. The views here can be stunning depending on where you go, consisting of rolling fields, sunny skies, farmland, forest, and trees, you name it, nature-wise, New Franklin has it. On the morning of June 21st, an odd discovery was made by one of the many farming residents of this small community. On her way out the door to begin chores, heading to her barn, she noticed that something was shining in the sunlight, and it was way over on the farthest edge of her cornfield. Because it was such a distance away, she could not quite make out what this object was. She did, however, know that whatever it was, it did not belong there, and she was going to keep an eye on it the rest of the day.
Because the field is planted, access to that would be hard. I waited for my husband to get up. I talked to him. He said, oh, it's probably somebody cutting wood or hunting or whatever. I went about my day, did my chores, came back, noticed that it was still there, said something again, and it wasn't till later, till I called the sheriff's office and realized that there's nobody moving around back there. There's no sound coming from back there. It shouldn't be there.
Now, this call was made around noon, and it came into the Wayne County Sheriff's Office. Deputy Steve Browning was dispatched to investigate. Once Deputy Browning got there, he found a lane that gave access to the field. He made his way down this lane, parked his vehicle, and saw car tracks and boot prints leading through the cornfield to this object the caller had seen. He followed the tracks, which eventually led him to what looked to be an abandoned vehicle.
As I approached the vehicle, I had received a dispatch had contacted me prior to reaching the car asking for me to give them a call. So I contacted dispatch. They explained a little bit more detail to me as far as a missing vehicle from New Franklin. They gave me the license plate, which I wrote on my palm of my hand. And then as I began to approach the vehicle, I looked at the front license plate and observed the plate, and I looked at my hand, and the plates matched.
So Deputy Browning is very economical.
Seems like an extremely efficient way to handle business. I don't personally recall the last time I wrote on my own hand, but I might implement this.
Yeah, I mean, Deputy Browning is very inspirational. I believe they call it a palm pad.
Oh,
right?
No, I don't know. Is that a thing?
I mean, occasionally I hear jokes where somebody will say they're going to write on their palm pad and they take out their pen and, in fact, write on their palm.
I think you're hanging out with some old people or something because I have literally...
I think this might be an old person thing, but I'm just educating the younger generation listening that indeed you would term this a palm pad. I mean, who needs paper?
Or an iPad or anything. You have your palm.
Yeah, there's something about simplicity.
Began to approach the car from the front. As I got closer, the driver's side window was down. Looking through the window between the front and back seat, I could see what appeared to be skin between those two seats. I then reapproached, coming up from the side of the window, the passenger side rear window. Upon looking in, I observed an individual in there.
Can you describe for the jury what you saw?
The individual's face was very dark purple. I can still picture that. There were taser wires coming off of the individual. She had on a Domino's shirt, tan shorts, a leather belt, white tennis shoes. There were zip ties around her hands or wrists and what appeared to be zip tie around her neck. There was also blood around her on the, I want to say on the floor, but I don't remember exactly where the blood was. And then at that point, I contacted my captain to make him aware of what I had found.
Now, this was not exactly what they had hoped to find in this vehicle, because along with this missing vehicle, there was also a missing woman, and her name was Ashley Biggs, a 25-year-old military veteran. She was a mother of a 6-year-old girl. The young woman found in this vehicle was not only bound with industrial strength zip ties with taser wire sticking out from her body, she also looked to have been severely, severely beaten. As you heard Deputy Browning say, she was still wearing her Domino's pizza delivery uniform. The shirt was pulled up. It revealed breasts that were bound flat. Inside the vehicle was an insulated pizza delivery bag and an untouched pizza. They noted that there were several delivery sticker receipts all over the car from deliveries that had been made that night, the last of which being at approximately 11:42 p.m., and this receipt was stuck on the steering wheel. The sheriff's office got to work and began investigating the crime scene, eventually removing the body and transporting it to the Summit County Medical Examiner for autopsy. They were leaning towards the idea that the registered owner, Ashley Biggs, was the victim, but they needed to confirm an ID. So they called Ashley's mother, Kimberly, questioned her about the various tattoos found on the body, and through Kimberly's insight, they had a positive ID. The body was that of Ashley Biggs.
Ashley Biggs was one in a million. If you met her once, you'd never forget her. Ashley was the kindest, most gentle soul you could ever meet. She loved everyone. There was not a mean bone in Ashley's body.
Ashley was born on January 9th, 1987 in New Franklin, Ohio, to her mother, Kimberly Biggs, and an absent father who we know lives in Florida but does not claim to be the father of Ashley. So she grew up in a single-parent family. Unfortunately, Ashley's early life wasn't as picture perfect as one would hope. Kimberly, the only parent, was an addict, crack cocaine being her drug of choice. Ashley would bounce back and forth from her grandmother to her mother's care for the majority of her early childhood. However, despite Kimberly's addiction, she did want to provide a stable and loving home for Ashley. And eventually, when Ashley was 8 or 9 years old, Kimberly was free of her addiction. She was working and living under a roof with her daughter, which is really an accomplishment to be able to pull out of addiction.
Yeah, it doesn't happen that often. So I completely agree.
We have a tendency as a society, and this will play into this story, to look down on addicts. But at the end of the day, everybody has something. Some things we can see visually, like obesity. Other things we can't, like bipolar disorder. This is something that you could most likely see visually. I'm sure her body looked like a crack horse. Oh, I'm going to have to cut that out. That was rough.
That was pretty intense there. Okay. Her body looked like a crack whore. All right.
But really, though, in all seriousness, this was something visually that people could see. And this would be used against Kimberly down the road, which sucks because, yes, she had this negative characteristic and quality, but she also had the strength to pull herself out of it, get sober. And I can tell you that she stayed sober. That's pretty amazing. We always forget the positive, don't we?
We do. It's hard sometimes, I think. And it's easy to judge people, but until you've done it or you've walked in their shoes, you have no idea. This lady is a single mom. For a minute when you said the absent father, obviously Ashley has the same last name as her mom. I can only imagine what that whole entire family had gone through throughout the course of their life.
I mean, life is hard. You do the best you can. And that's what Kimberly did. She got sober. She stayed sober. And she really became a loving mother. Ashley was her world. They would move a lot, with Ashley often changing schools. According to her mother, she did fairly well in school overall academically. She did have trouble fitting in with her peers. She didn't have many friends. And this is despite having a kind and gentle demeanor. I heard that a lot in the research. She was a kind person. Perhaps one reason she didn't quite fit in was because she was a tomboy. She enjoyed hunting and fishing, so not your typical teenage girly girl. Around the age of 16, Kimberly would find out that Ashley wasn't just a tomboy. She was also gay. Initially, Kimberly was shocked. She was disappointed, but she did quickly realize that it did not matter what Ashley's preferences were. She would love Ashley unconditionally, and she did just that. One thing that Ashley really didn't like to do, and I understand this too, is disappoint her mom. When Ashley came out to Kimberly, she did see that first hint of disappointment from her mother. Even though Ashley wasn't into boys, she wanted to at least give a relationship with a young man a chance. For her mom, for herself, just try it and see if maybe she was also attracted to men. This is when Ashley would meet 25-year-old Chad Cobb. And she was 17 years old at this time. So there is an age gap here, which 17 to 25, in my opinion, there's quite a huge maturity gap too.
I think that's super creepy. I would not want my 17-year-old dating a 25-year-old. When I was 17, I was definitely trying to get with hot 35-year-olds. But
aren't you glad it never worked out? Because you'd be with a 65-year-old now, unless it's a sugar daddy. You know, I mean, there's that.
We actually just looked him up recently, and he is still hot. I'll send you a picture of him. Anyways, as a 42-year-old, don't think that that's appropriate, but definitely at the time, it was fine.
Also, another little tidbit is that Chad Cobb was actually dating one of Ashley's friends at the time.
Oh.
And somehow, Ashley and Chad started developing a romantic relationship, and it really took off from there. They soon entered an exclusive relationship, a sexual relationship. Within a year of moving in together, Ashley became pregnant. The couple would welcome a baby girl. They named her Grace. And this moment was obviously a huge turning point for both of them. They just took on an incredible responsibility for at least 18 years. Now, they both did things a little bit differently, and this could be due to that gap in maturity. Whereas Chad was 25, he'd kind of already sown his oats a little bit. He really flourished as a father.
Really come into being a man when he was a father. Kind of lost before then, but that's probably his shining moment when he first became a dad.
So Chad essentially took off with this new responsibility in his life. Ashley, on the other hand, well, she did struggle, and this could be for a variety of reasons. We know that she's going back and forth on her sexuality. She had the demands of being a new mother, perhaps some postpartum depression. There were also some allegations of abuse between Chad and Ashley, with Chad being the aggressor. Kimberly, Ashley's mom, states in several interviews that Chad would not allow contact between Ashley and herself, that he wouldn't allow phone calls, visits, etc. He would use Kimberly's past, her drug addiction, as the reason. To me, that sounds like an excuse because she had been clear and free from drugs for quite some time. but it was used against her. There were times when Ashley would call Kimberly. She would tell her that Chad had beat her up. One weekend, Kimberly received a call similar to these allegations of abuse, and she called the cops on Chad. Now, Chad would end up spending the weekend in jail, and he was required to attend anger management classes. So we know that there was some abuse going on, enough so that he did get arrested. According to Kimberly, Ashley told her that Chad beat her up at least 17 times and threw her down the stairs when she was 7 months pregnant.
Oh my gosh.
Because of this, Ashley would temporarily stay with her mom in between these domestic violence episodes. She even at one point did take up residence in a battered women's shelter.
Ashley did talk to me about the relationship between her and Chad, and it was very tumultuous. He, from the get-go, was not kind to her. He was physically, emotionally abusive. We saw her demise coming, and he made it very clear that if she ever tried to take their daughter from him, he would hunt her down.
There were various sources. That was one of Ashley's friends that relayed similar information on the relationship being an abusive and controlling one. And again, I don't know if this had to do with that age gap. I mean, he's 25. It's almost like he is superior in life experience at 25 as opposed to 17. I don't know if this got into his head. He wanted to control what she did because he thought he knew better. I don't know. Ultimately, the couple would break up and they would acquire separate living arrangements. They also would share custody of their daughter, Grace. They both continued to work hard to provide what Grace needed. Ashley ended up getting two jobs. However, for whatever reason, Ashley didn't feel fulfilled. I think we all go through that in our life at one point or another, and we make decisions based upon that, sometimes impulsive decisions. Ashley's decision was to join the military. She wanted to get away. She wanted to do something greater than what she felt she was contributing to society. In October of 2007, she went off to the military. Prior to leaving, she decided to sign her parenting rights over to Chad. That was a very long sigh. I think you might have something to say, maybe.
She seems like a very lost individual and obviously felt like something wasn't right in her life, making life decisions, and then to sign away your kid, though. I just think as a mother, I don't know how you do that. I really don't. I mean, I understand that she didn't have the best life, but I just can't imagine giving up rights to my kid. Even if you just gave him temporary custody, to sign the rights over, oh man, that's a permanent solution to temporary feelings for sure.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And that's okay that you have that opinion. I say that because sometimes I feel as if when these podcasts get out there, if you don't agree with everything about the victim or what they did, you're a bad person. And you're not. I agree too. I feel the same way, especially signing over those rights to a person who is a supposed abuser. Nevertheless, whatever Ashley based her decision upon, Ashley went to the military, and not only did she sign these rights away, but she went radio silent. She completely cut off contact with her daughter.
Ashley seemed to be a really nice individual. You know, some people might say that as a mother, she might have fallen a little bit short because she left her child's life for a period of time.
No phone calls, no letters to see how her daughter was doing. She was just gone from her life.
And just so you know, that woman that you heard speaking there is Chad's mother. She was also interviewed along with Kimberly in many different interviews discussing this story. And everybody is in agreement that Ashley did go no contact with her daughter for this period of time. In total, it was a 6-year period.
Wow.
Chad was the sole caregiver of Grace. There was no contact from Ashley. Chad took this role very seriously. He was quite close to their daughter. As you would imagine, Chad was not going to wait around for Ashley. He moved on with his life after she left for the military and went no contact. He even met another woman named Erica Stefanko.
Chad is a dad first and foremost. He loved his kids. Chad didn't date a whole lot. His main concern was raising GC in the winter of 07. He met Erica. Subsequently, they had two more children together. They did get married. Erica had once told me that she was jealous of Chad and GC's relationship. Erica knew this going into the relationship, that they had a nice bond, and she didn't like that bond.
Before we keep going, I just want to mention that you will hear many people refer to Grace as GC. I will continue to say Grace. If you hear GC, that is who they're referring to. You heard Chad's mother there say that she saw it too. Chad and Grace had a bond that could not be broken. When he met Erica, she came into the picture and she understood that they had this bond, but she was jealous of it right from the get-go. You actually have experience with this because you have your son from your first marriage and you now have your, we refer to him as lesbian partner. Maybe we shouldn't in this episode. So you guys had that bond too prior to you meeting him. How did he take that? Did it take time? Was there jealousy?
I don't ever think there was jealousy, but it definitely took time. And yeah, my situation is very similar. My son's father has nothing to do with him. He's seen him once in the last 7 years-ish. What was hardest when my lesbian partner came into the relationship was allowing him to have a say, I guess, in how I raised my son versus how he fit in. But also, I waited almost an entire year before he met my son. So we had some time alone to form our own relationship before there was an actual introduction to my kid. In this situation, I think it'd be a little bit different. And maybe this sounds like I'm anti-feminine or anti-woman, but having a female have to accept a relationship with their daughter versus the other way around. We just think too much into this shit.
On the same hand, you almost feel like because we are women, we are the bearer of children and we are biologically supposed to be the nurturing half. I know when I see children out there being mistreated, sometimes you see it in the grocery stores, or I see some of the stuff I do with my job. I wish I could take that kid and love on them, bring them home. So it's interesting that Erica did not have any of that nurturing, loving feeling towards Grace. Meanwhile, Ashley was having issues with her knees. She was having issues with her asthma in the military, and ultimately she was unable to continue. So she returned home shortly after. Now, when she returned home, her life had changed too. She was now involved in a relationship as well with her new girlfriend named Brittany, and it was a serious, committed relationship. She felt safe. She felt secure in Brittany. Much the opposite from her relationship with Chad. Because she felt this feeling of security, she did open up to Brittany about her past, about the abusive relationship with Chad, and of course, about her daughter, Grace. This admission to her partner and this newfound feeling of being stable in a relationship made Ashley realize that she wanted that relationship back with her daughter. She wanted to be a part of her life, and she was ready to take the steps to do so. Initially, Chad and Grace were nowhere to be found, so Ashley did have to hire a private investigator to track the two down, and she found them. Grace was now in first grade, so there's a huge gap there, that six-year gap. She was enrolled in a private Catholic school in Doylestown, Ohio. With this information in hand, Ashley pursued becoming a part of her daughter's life again. We're going to listen to some audio right now. I think after you hear it, you're going to agree that after 6 years of no contact with Grace, Ashley may have gone about this in the wrong manner.
Chad went to school to pick up his daughter and found out that there was no daughter to be picked up. They had sent the daughter home with Ashley. Matter of fact, the police had to be there because the daughter did not recognize her mom, did not want to go with her because she didn't know who she was. And I guess the police had to tell her, no, this is your biological mom. It is okay for you to go with her.
Okay, I'm sorry. What? You signed over rights. You're nowhere to be found. And you can just show up at the school and pick up the kid? No.
It seems unbelievable, but this is known to have happened just like this. There was a local magistrate that awarded custody of Grace to Ashley, and they never notified Chad of this decision. So legally, Ashley was able to just go to this school and pick that child up. Chad didn't know. That's like a parent's worst nightmare.
That's worse than your worst. I mean, that is terrible. I guess I just don't understand. Normally, at least from my experience with the legal part of this, he may not have been officially notified, but he should have been, because I know when I had pursued terminating parental rights, you have to make a genuine effort to contact them, including notifying them at multiple addresses, etc. And then if they cannot be reached, if there's no option to reach them, you have to post it in the newspaper, which I understand they may not get it at that point, but it just seems like if she hired a private investigator to find them in the first place, there is absolutely no reason why the dad would not be notified or shouldn't have been legally notified.
Well, I think got it right. They're legally notified. I don't know the details to this. I do know that he wasn't. So somehow steps were skipped and the judicial system thought they weren't. I don't know exactly how Ashley handled that. Something happened, he wasn't notified, and it was a complete shock when he arrived at that school.
From Chad's perspective, I think he did get a raw deal. I mean, he was the primary custodian of this young girl. She was all he knew. He was losing control, losing custody, losing contact with his daughter. That was a source of real fear and frustration and a great deal of concern that if he didn't do something, something bad would happen to his children.
This might be unpopular opinion here.
Oh, no, not on this podcast.
She decided to prioritize herself, her mental health, her well-being, whatever it was, and just up and leaves this kid for how long, and then thinks she can just waltz back in and have all the rights that she was given by God and gave up. I'm not okay with that. I don't think that that's right. He's been slaving away. He's had to financially be independent. He's had to take care of this kid, single dad. That is not an easy life. And to just come in later and think, oh, nope, I birthed her. Oh, nope. I'm not a fan.
Totally agree. I'm not either. It's really scary and eye-opening what can happen in some of these situations. I don't know how far that would get now in 2024, but this was not that long ago, 2011, around there.
I think she had to have been playing the whole victim card. He was an abuser. Look at these police records. I'm afraid of him.
That did play into it. I do recall reading in one of the articles that she did use those abuse allegations in the judicial system to get custody. We talked about how this was an incredibly contentious custody battle, and that's exactly what this turned into, with both parties finding fault in the other. On one hand, Chad didn't approve of the lesbian relationship Ashley and Brittany were involved in, but this wasn't the only point of contention he raised.
Over having temporary tattoos on her, over her giving her mom a hug goodbye, all kinds of things that just irritated him about the situation. There was multiple calls for well checks and walkthroughs of our home just to make sure that she was well taken care of, check our cupboards, things like that. There were reports made that she was healthy and happy and the home was clean and had food and water.
That was Brittany testifying in court. So this is a firsthand account that is Ashley's girlfriend who also lived in the home and was involved in the situation because she had to be. She was a significant other. Now, on the other side of the equation, Ashley and Brittany were extremely concerned over the stories Grace would be relaying to them about her stepmom, Erica. Erica was jealous immediately when she got into this relationship of that bond that Grace and Chad had. And this jealousy seemed to come forth to Grace and made very apparent to her by Erica's actions.
And what types of things are we talking about that you're remembering?
She was mentally abusive and physically.
And How was she mentally abusive?
She would tell me that if I told my dad what she was doing to me, then she would do worse. And I kind of figure that's like mentally.
And you said physically. So what was the physical type of abuse?
I remember she would hold me on the ground and she would hit me. And then she also, before, made me eat dog feces.
So let's talk about that. Do you know why she made you eat dog feces?
Because she was jealous of my relationship with my father.
With who?
With my father.
With your father.
As you probably know, that was Grace testifying on the stand. This is a two-edged sword, though. We know that there was abuse that Erica put down on Grace. However, Grace did love her father, and she did want to protect him as well. And we're going to get more into that moving forward. But Grace did have some underlying motives here in her testimony. Do I think that the abuse happened between Eric and her? I absolutely do. I absolutely do. By the person that Erica is, and you'll continue to see that develop. And Grace wasn't the only one who saw this abuse. Others saw some of it as well. So there was definitely something happening in the home between those two that was not positive.
So my daughter is the age that Grace was when Ashley came back. And I will say that even though I don't think it's right that she just was able to come back into the picture and have open access to her daughter, I do think that if someone was introduced to my daughter at this age, fast forward 2-3 years, if they had treated her kindly and took care of her and showed her love, I don't think she'd really remember life before that person.
Yeah, that's a good point. No matter the circumstances, it's obvious that both couples are going back and forth. This has turned into an all-out war of accusations that seemed never ending.
He was out of money for the custody attorney, not getting anywhere with the courts. One of his last conversations with me was he was going to turn custody over. He didn't know what else to do.
Financially, this stuff can put you in ruins.
Oh, for sure.
And that's what was happening here as well. Chad had run out of money to fight this legal battle for his daughter, whom he had solely raised, again, for the first 6 years of her life, whom he was very close with. He felt as if he had nowhere to turn. I can imagine that would be a pretty damn horrible feeling. I don't know what I would do in that situation.
Yeah, I think you're backed into a corner. And if the stepmom is causing chaos at home, men typically try to take the path of least resistance. So if the daughter wants to be with the mom and the stepmom is making his life miserable, I can see him giving up and moving on.
Yeah. Now, only 2 days after this conversation that Chad had with his mom on the evening of June 20th, 2012, 25-year-old Ashley Biggs was out working as a delivery driver for Domino's Pizza. She had held this job for a while at this point, and she was actually very good at it. She was on the last call of the night at approximately 11:45 p.m. She pulled up to the building where she was supposed to be delivering this pizza. There were no lights. She was told to look for the back door by the caller who had ordered it. As she exited her car, she found this door. She saw a familiar face greet her. It was that of her ex, Chad Cobb. She knew this wasn't going to be a good interaction, but most likely she thought this was just going to be another argument between the two, maybe some type of physical altercation, but I doubt in her head she was thinking that this was the end of her life. Meanwhile, Ashley's delayed arrival back to Domino's was really starting to worry her manager and good friend, Matthew Travis.
She don't return in a timely manner. I lock up the shop and I go try to find her.
When you say a timely manner, how much time do you think passed before you started getting worried?
15, 20 minutes.
And according to you, that would have been ample time for her to go drop the pizza off and come back?
Absolutely. She was my best driver. She is quick.
Okay. At any time before you lock up and just going out there, did you try to call her?
Several times.
Did she answer?
No.
And you had her number?
On speed dial.
All right, so you lock up and try to go find her. Tell the jury what happens.
I went to where she was supposed to be delivering the pizza. I pulled into the parking lot. I seen a bottle of blood. I turned around and I called the police.
You hear him there, still emotional. He says that he went to the scene of the pizza delivery and he saw blood on the ground. He also noted that Ashley's phone was smashed on the ground and he immediately called the police. When police arrived, they knew they had to get going on this right away. There was obvious cause for alarm. There was foul play here. This wasn't a case of someone trying to disappear. Something truly bad had happened. One of the first things they would do would be to get in contact with those closest to Ashley. They did this immediately that night. They called Kimberly, her mother, and they called Brittany. When they talked to Brittany right away, she told them it was Chad. No hesitation. Without even knowing the details of this, she immediately went to Chad. That is how contentious this child custody battle was.
Well, we all know we start closest to the victim and everything that had been going on, 100% it's Chad.
Yeah, I mean, immediately your mind goes there. I think 99% of the time, your intuition on something so outward like this is correct. There is that 1%, though, that we can kind of get caught up in. However, in this case, they were correct. The detective who was making these phone calls was named Michael Hitchings. He didn't waste any time when Brittany told him it was Chad. He went straight out and started searching for Chad. Soon, they received an anonymous tip. Somebody had called in saying they saw Chad's car, which was a Lincoln Navigator, only a mile away from this scene where the pizza was supposed to be delivered. And that mile away was actually at his grandparents' house.
I don't understand how Chad's not playing the tape, right? How in the fuck do you think you're going to get away with this? I don't get it. I really don't. And then what? Your daughter has nobody? The level of stupidity.
Absolutely. I think as we go on, you might understand his mentality a little bit more. Not necessarily the idea of, I need to murder someone, but how he got there and how he was pushed there into making a very bad, impulsive decision.
So we started looking at Chad and trying to find out where he was. Chad wasn't in the car. He was actually hiding in the woods when the officer came up.
So when the officers arrived, Chad was not in the car. He was in the woods behind his grandparents' house. Oddly, there were people in that vehicle. Inside was Erica and all four children. Remember, it's 3-4 in the morning at this point, now the 21st. Definitely past my kids' bedtime.
For sure.
It looks quite suspicious that they're sitting in this vehicle, all of them, and Chad's hiding in the woods with blood all over him. Remember, at this point as well, they still had not found Ashley's vehicle or body yet. They were just going on, Ashley Biggs is missing, her phone is smashed on the ground, and there's a puddle of blood at the spot where she was to deliver this pizza. So technically, this wasn't considered a homicide yet. They still probably had hopes that Ashley could be alive.
We then did a search warrant of his home. He had a backpack with all the equipment in it, the zip ties, you know, all kinds of stuff. And in that, we found Ashley's blood on many of those different items.
And there was overwhelming evidence. I mean, literally left on a silver platter on about Chad.
I mean, all they had to do was get this search warrant, walk in the house, and they pretty much had Chad by the balls.
Yeah, sounds like it. All signs at this point are pointing to Chad, but let's keep going, I guess.
Yes, it really feels like Chad is the culprit here. They put out the bolo for Ashley's vehicle, be on the lookout. And we know that a few hours later into the morning on the 21st, we get this woman who spots a suspicious looking object in her cornfield, and she makes the call at noon to the sheriff's department. So now we have Chad, we have Ashley's body, we have the vehicle. Once they're able to put two and two together and find the zip ties on Ashley's body, find the tasers in her body, they were able to corroborate that evidence found in the backpack absolutely was on Ashley too. So it wasn't just Ashley's blood in the backpack. Now we know that the objects in there were also on her body. This seemed like a slam dunk case here.
Yeah, I'm slamming at this point. I'm 100% on board. Oof.
Oof. Wow, slamming. And we are slamming because Chad was charged with first degree premeditated murder and was facing the death penalty.
Wow, took a super weird turn.
Yeah. No, exactly what we anticipated. I mean, that's good. I'm glad we can go in a straight path because sometimes it can get a little varied. It may here in a minute, but because it was such an airtight case with all of this physical evidence, Chad's defense attorney knew that if it went to trial, Chad most likely would receive the ultimate punishment, that of death. His attorney discussed with him this idea, and because Chad still wanted to attempt to be there for his children in whatever way he could, whether that be from prison or not, he didn't want it to be from the grave, right? So he chose to take a plea deal. The plea deal was life without the possibility of parole. Chad is facing the rest of his life in prison for his impulsive actions. In his own vague words, this is what Chad claims happened that night.
It's the parking lot where Ashley died, yes, sir. A short time later, Ashley showed up. She pulled in, she circled, and I remember her car had the headlights facing towards 619. Worked up. With everything that was going on, looking back, she wasn't happy to see me, that's for certain. I know I had my work taser on me, and I know I had my diving knife on me. When I had to leave, I picked her up and put her in the car. I remember I struggled. She was heavy to get in the car, but I had to leave. There were some things that happened, and I just... It's hard to explain, but the only thing in my mind at that time was I had to leave and I couldn't leave Ashley there. I had to get away from her. At the time I was trying to just get somewhere safe.
Did he even say anything?
That was at trial. He did not get into details about exactly what happened. I guess everybody has different motives. Maybe it's too painful for Chad, which is, come on, man. Criminals come up with all kinds of excuses not to say different things. And Chad was tight-lipped. That's the gist of what he said went down. So open, shut, done, case closed. We have a murderer behind bars, but there were some details still hanging out there in this case. We said that this all started from a pizza delivery. A caller placed an order that night to Domino's. Ashley's manager, who we heard testify earlier, clearly remembered that that caller was female, not Chad.
Accomplice.
We probably know who this is, right?
Nope, we don't, because there's so many twists and turns in this case. We have no idea who it is.
Wow, I'm going to have to take that out, asshole. You realize that, right? Yeah. This female was, in fact, Erica. Now, also, was she the one who transported Chad from where he dropped Ashley's vehicle and body over to his grandparents? Because he wasn't found with that vehicle and body. He was found over at his grandparents. How'd he get there?
That part I do have a question mark on. I wonder if it was his mom. Do you think it was his mom?
Well, that's what this boils down to, is who do we trust? How long can we trust them? I mean, this all comes down to human interpersonal relationships, because Chad does know there's an accomplice. He has not opened his mouth yet. He's sitting in prison for the rest of his life, and he's taking it to the grave.
Sure, but you already said he would do anything he could to still be there for his kids. So why is he going to rat out his wife if that would keep his kids homeless?
We're getting there. It was apparent to us, and apparently everybody, that Erica was involved in some capacity. But again, Chad would not give this information up. And with Chad in prison, justice felt served in a way. Without any evidence against Erica other than the caller was female, yeah, it was suspicious she was sitting out there. They need evidence. They can't win a case on hearsay. It's just not possible. Their hands were tied in this. As time went on, years, Erica would visit Chad in prison. She would take the children to visit, and they shared many jail phone calls.
You know, part of me wants to say that if this is too hard on you, you can let me go, but...
No, sweetie, this whole situation, but I got to get a handle on myself. I really do. I'm not going anywhere, though.
And I miss my babies.
I know that. You're going to see your babies.
This entire situation.
Hey, look at me. I promise you, you're going to see your babies.
I love you, though. I'm...
I know you do.
Committed to you and our family and our babies and...
We'll all be together again. We will.
What? In heaven?
No. On earth.
Erica's a great wife. She's very reassuring.
Sure.
I have no sympathy for Chad.
Same.
None.
Yep. Me either.
But there is always that factor of hearing any human, whether they're a serial killer or a saint, getting emotional. You can hear emotion in his voice as far as he misses his kids. You can tell he loves them. I do think he loves his kids. Now, Erica was busy being a loving, reassuring, I can't say beautiful wife, but good wife. What Chad didn't know, though, was that as soon as he was locked away for life, Erica had started a relationship with Chad's best friend, Michael Stefanko. And in no time, she was also pregnant.
Shut up.
Dead serious. Of course, this was Michael's baby. Not only that, Michael had moved into Chad and Erica's home. They had even changed the name of Chad's business to make it their own. So as Chad continued to carry out his life sentence, Erica continued on as if nothing ever happened. She was living with her new little family. She was happy. She was playing Chad, really. As for Grace, she was currently in the custody of Chad's parents and lived with them, which is a really good thing that she didn't have to stay in that home with Erica. It wasn't long before Chad would find out about Erica and her lies. As we imagine, he was fucking pissed. Not only did he find out about her new life and his best friend, Erica was now starting to play games. She was attempting to keep his children away from his mother and father, their grandparents. Whenever Chad and Erica would have a disagreement, this is when she would keep them from the grandparents. And he was getting really sick of the behavior because obviously he felt the incredible betrayal with his best friend. But now Erica is really screwing over his mom, who he was very close with. Interestingly enough, it was also around this time when all of this was occurring that a neighbor came forward with some new information.
We had started talking about things that were going on. And she had told us that she wouldn't admit or say that she had made the phone call to make the pizza delivery order. But she said she knew who did. And she wouldn't tell us why, because she said that she didn't want to drag us into it. And at the time, I had just thought, you know, maybe she didn't want us to have to testify against Chad, you know, since we were friends with him. So I didn't really think anything of it. But she had said that there was a lot of evidence that the police had missed when they went through the house. She never said what the evidence was. She also said that something about the computer, that there was a lot of evidence on the computer. During the dinner conversation, it wasn't so much about Ashley in that conversation. But she had talked about her before. She really kind of expressed her hate for her. She had talked about, and I don't know how anybody could do this, but she talked about how she had gotten into her email and social media accounts, and she could see what Ashley was doing, what she was saying, what she knew, things like that.
Did she talk about, after Ashley was murdered, anything she may have done in regards to Ashley?
She did say that after everything had happened, that she would visit Ashley's grave. And at one point, I know that she had said that she had defecated on her grave.
Isn't that gross?
Yeah, people of that caliber, nothing surprises me. So no shocker for me, I guess, but it is very disrespectful for sure.
I mean, dropping your pants in a cemetery and squatting down and taking it. It just, the whole scenario blows my mind. I'm sure she didn't go on Memorial Day.
No.
Too busy for that. Yeah.
Probably not, no.
I expected a better laugh out of that. What the? I thought that was a good one.
I just believe, I guess, that when you die, like, you don't care anymore. You're gone. So if someone were to defecate on my grave, anyone out there listening, any haters, just know that it won't bother me. I mean, if anything, you are really just fertilizing the grass around my tomb. And I think it'll be fine. I'm not that worried about it.
Glass is half full. I love your outlook on life. That was good.
It's more my outlook on death. You're gone. You don't care. You really don't.
It's true. Who it does affect, and I've noticed this too in certain situations, is yes, the deceased is no longer the victim. The true victims are the people left behind because they are forced to feel all the emotions and they're forced to live the remainder of their lives with these emotions. So for Erica, she may have thought this was directed at Ashley, but in reality, this was directed at the family left behind because it would affect them. Erica has a very intense hatred for Ashley. We've heard about it prior to this. We continue to hear about it. I think we all know that Erica played a role in this murder. It was in 2017, 5 years since the murder, Chad being locked up and Erica living freely, that he wrote a letter to detectives implicating Erica. This wasn't enough to convict her, and they knew this, but it did spur law enforcement to continue to push. More evidence would make its way to them. One piece of evidence was a confession made to Chad's mother by Erica. There was a night where Chad's mother and Erica had gotten together and had some drinks. Chad's mother decided to record this conversation. She was hell-bent on Erica paying just as much as Chad. Chad was her baby. The conversation is very hard to hear, which is why I'm not going to include it. But in it, Erica tells Chad's mom that she was just following what Chad had told her to do that night. That she felt no remorse for what happened to Ashley, even the brutal beating before her life ended. She felt bad for everyone else involved, everyone except the victim, Ashley. That's how deep her hatred ran. And this conversation lasted quite some time with many things being discussed about the events. Even the fact that her and Chad discussed who would do the time for the crime. According to Erica, she did everything except participate in the physical portion of the murder. But according to Chad, that wasn't the case.
Did you strangle her?
I'm not the one who strangled her, sir.
Would you please repeat that?
I am not the one that strangled her, sir.
I see. So now you plead guilty, and now you're saying that you didn't kill her. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Exclusive video shows Stefanko handcuffed and heading into the police station shortly after the U.S. Marshals, Northern Ohio Violent Fugitive Task Force, and New Franklin police picked her up following a traffic stop. Detective Michael Hitchings believes Stefanko got away with murder for 7 years until now.
I don't know. I don't know how you could live with that. Yeah, it's something that most of us couldn't think of.
Erica was arrested. She did go to trial, and she was found guilty by a Summit County jury, both on aggravated murder and murder for the 2012 killing of 25-year-old Ashley Biggs.
That was actually a twist.
Yes, and this was the second trial for her. The initial conviction was overturned on appeal.
So did Chad get out? Did he cut a deal? What happened?
Chad's going to be there for life. And I do want to play Chad's testimony against her, just a portion and why he did what he did. Because we already know he was protecting his children. That seemed to be his main motivation, but we didn't really get into the details of that. And he does in his testimony.
And when you stood before Judge Coral Jones and she asked you, did you have anything to say? Why didn't you mention Erica? Fear of what?
Something happening to my children.
And how would something happen to your children if you talked about Erica?
Threats over the years have been made clear if anything were to be said.
Mr. O'Brien has indicated or I guess alluded to the fact in his questions that you are just now, for the first time, bringing up Erica into this as being involved in Ashley's death. You recall that?
Yes, sir.
And is that true? It's the first time you brought it up?
No, sir.
Did you have discussions with your attorneys back in 2012 regarding Erica's involvement?
One of them, yes, sir.
And that, when you discussed it with your attorney, what was it that kept you then from talking about it to the judge or anybody else?
Objection, Your Honor, hearsay. Losing my children.
Hold on. The judge has overruled the objection. Go ahead. So question to you then is, if you told your attorney, then why didn't you tell anybody else, like the judge or the state, or go to trial?
It was very specifically explained to me that if I did not resolve my case within the year anniversary of those kids being JR6, that I would lose them.
All right. And were you protecting anybody in 2012 when you took that plea?
My children.
And what about Erica?
I wasn't trying to. My main focus was I could not lose my kids.
I actually do feel bad for him a little bit. It has seemed throughout this entire episode that he does care about his kids. And I know that you said that and you knew all the details of the case. And we know I just show up and everything's a surprise. But I am reaffirming what you thought the entire episode, which is he genuinely cared about these kids. 100%, you can tell. So much so that he was willing to just go down for it to keep them safe.
Yes. It's hard not to have some sympathy for him, but I don't. I mean, we know we'll do anything to protect our children, but there are definitely other ways he could have gone with this.
Is there yet anything out there? What had led up to this culmination? Was it just the overall stress? It just seems like it came out of nowhere.
There was a multitude of factors here. There was the fact that, yes, Ashley was a thorn in his side. He was no longer seeing his child as much as he would have liked to. And yes, he does have a deep love for them. So there was that portion. There was his new wife who hated Ashley, who had a great influence over him. We know that people can have such a high influence over others that they do stupid things. So he had his own feelings about missing his child. He had this hatred from Erica probably beating down on him every day. And then there was that third aspect of finances. He had run out of money to fight this child custody battle. He didn't know what else to do except sign over rights to Ashley. So I think he had a trifecta of things going on that did lead him down this road. There's always another way out, though. This was a permanent fix to a temporary problem. This would have gotten handled eventually.
Yes.
I'm not Erica and I'm not Chad and no one else is either. So we can't say for sure. But to me, Erica ultimately was the mastermind of this entire ordeal. Yes, she got charged, but I didn't say yet that she will be up for parole in 30 years. So she will have an opportunity to come live outside those walls. It's just a convoluted mess, really. Both of them should be held responsible. And now they are. So good news.
Yeah, I think they're both where they belong.
I think so too. All right, so you're packing now for Puerto Rico, right?
Puerto Rico.
Wow. We already discussed not trying to speak Spanish there. You're not going to, right?
Uh-huh. ¿Dónde está el baño?
Well, I actually understood that as a youper. So...
No, I'm not going to. And I just want to quick do one more plug. CrimeCon. We just have to remind everyone as many times as we possibly can. We have some merch. We are going to have some raffle baskets. We are going to go out.
We're just going to live it up.
I'm actually getting super excited.
Any jokes for the end of this? Maybe a Puerto Rico joke?
Let me see. I wonder if I could find like a pizza joke.
Oh, 100%.
Oh, here's a really stupid one. Are you ready?
Never been more ready.
What do you call diarrhea that you get from Domino's?
I don't know.
Pizzeria.
Oh my gosh, that was... I don't know why I like it. Why do I like it? That's pretty good. Pizzeria. I just had an old person reaction. Just like looked to the side and kind of zoned out for a minute. I was like, wow. All right, man, we'll cut this. I know you got packing to do. Thanks for joining me, and thank you all for joining us. And we'll see you in a couple weeks.
Bye.
See ya.
Adios.
Oh, God.